Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 135 of the MTB podcast, presented and hosted by Worldwide Cyclery. I am Jared.
I am Liam.
My name is Trevor.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. And in this episode, we will discuss some Sea Otter highlights, Liam and Trevor's recent racing experiences, Trevor and my most recent Chasing Epic trip to Utah, a new bike build, new products, and some epic listener questions ranging from if you really need another bike to mountain bike time travel and everything in between.
You do need another bike. I'll just start with that.
I'm trying to like come to terms with the fact that I don't need another bike, but eventually I will.
Well, you're like pretty excessive and you just built one 3 days ago.
Yeah. Excuse me, mister. You're just trying to deflect the attention away from your own situation over
Liam can't talk.
You know, you just got a new bike as well and you're building like three more. At least one more. It's okay. We're all kind of in that.
I've been pretty good. I've had my 140 for over a year now.
You're a little too good. We're all kind of worried about you.
That's pretty good. Trevor is too good.
Yeah.
For this podcast, actually.
I'm almost thinking like he's doing some stuff secretly.
Yeah. The problem with it is like I built it the exact way I wanted to, and it came out
perfect.
Came out perfect, and I don't need anything else.
I haven't touched my trail bike in a year.
That's true.
Really. It's been basically
pretty concerned about both you guys, actually. Wondering if everything's okay at home. Well, let's start with Zach's words of wisdom. These are original words of wisdom, not like a quote from anybody or anything. Let the people live and worry about yourself. That's pretty good.
Oh man, I wish we could talk about Weaver's recent
I think we could kind of give a little backstory just to be a little vague.
His trolling on
Nextdoor.
Nextdoor app.
Yeah. So this comes from Zach. He spent a little time on Nextdoor because a lot of people on Nextdoor, I don't know if you're all familiar, it's like an online community platform.
It basically, we'll summarize this to keep him in the green. he just left a comment on a slightly controversial post and said, let the people live and worry about yourself.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend's mom saw it and got upset.
that's what he posted on it? Okay. Yeah. That's not too bad.
No, it wasn't horrible. No, not at all.
No.
But yeah, it's pretty funny. So
yeah.
That is his real life.
That's his real quote.
Words of wisdom. Let the people live and worry about yourself.
And it's valid.
Which, I mean, most people should probably worry about themselves more.
Yeah. You know, focus on yourself, what you're doing, and then everything else will fall into place, right? Which kind of perfectly ties us into our fun fact. The world's oldest living land animal, Jonathan, I'm going to try not to butcher this, the Seychelles giant tortoise. He celebrated his 191st birthday in December of 2023. Can you believe that?
Dude, 191.
It's pretty old.
Yeah.
You've seen some stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And apparently, prior to this, the oldest one was like 255 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder where that crazy? Is. Is that in the Galapagos, you think?
It is somewhere in that region. I think they move them around sometimes, but they do. I think they do like enjoy those tropical
islands. That's an OG right there.
Yeah.
True OG. I mean, yeah, the one that died in 2006, I think, and they were born in, what, it was like 1755. Like, can you believe that?
That's like close to being as old as the United States of America.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Super cool.
Survived multiple world wars.
Right. I mean, you have, like you said, you've seen some stuff.
A lot of grass, man.
I know.
A lot of bugs.
Pretty cool. I mean, they're very wise, I would imagine. Just like in Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yep.
My boy.
Your boy. Speaking of your boy, we got a fantastic testimonial here. Hey guys, longtime listener, first time emailer. I had some pretty serious hip and femur surgery back in November. During my recovery, I would slowly pedal a stationary bike in my bedroom and listen to the backlog of your podcast episodes. The humor and gear talk really helped keep my mind occupied and my spirits up. Ultimately, I got inspired to go from just loving bikes to wanting to build them. So I bought a heap of tools from the Worldwide Cyclery website, and when I was back on my feet, I jumped into a Yeti SB160 build project. I decided to film the whole thing, and I ended up with a somewhat elevated and unconventional take on a bike video that celebrates the art and craft of being a mechanic. So, this video was actually amazing. Well, here, the PS. Either way, all hail King Lentil and his endless reign from Scott. So,
video, with you, Scott.
the video is very impressive, and I'm going to put it in the show notes. He wanted to show it to more people, so anybody listening, feel free to check out the show notes and watch this really cool video. It's super impressive, and the bike is really nice.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The resources are at his disposal.
I mean,
YouTube's kind of your best friend for learning how to do stuff, and That's super cool. He just took it upon himself to build it up, and it's a super nice
kind of went full circle from listening to content to buying to building to creating content, and now he's back at the beginning.
Boom. Yeah, and I spoke with him. He's healthy, ready to shred. So
nice,
Scott. Thanks for listening, and pretty sick video you made there, bud. Well, speaking of pretty sick, Liam, how is Sea Otter? You just got back.
Sea slaughter.
A couple weeks ago or two ago?
A week ago.
It
feels like, I don't know. Been crazy. Sea otter was good. It was, I kind of go mostly to meet with other brands at this point. I don't participate in any of the bike riding there. It's kind of a pure work thing for me, but it was good. I mean, a lot of these people with the brands, I talk to them, you know, if not weekly, monthly, and then we don't ever get to see each other until kind of sea otter. So that's always cool. It's cool to see consumer interest was still high considering the, you know, wavy patterns of the bike industry right now.
State of the sport.
Yeah, it was good to see consumer interest very high. A lot of internals are very, you know, touch and go on how things are going. But people were there loving bikes, a ton of new product.
Yeah.
Like so much new product. It was the busiest new product season I've ever had working at Worldwide.
They're crazy.
Yeah, that's cool to see.
Yeah, it was kind of like COVID sold everything out. Everyone tried to make more of the same product, but just keep product on the shelves. And now this cycle's finally come out to where maybe products that got backlogged or didn't have the resources to get made on time have all came out at this time. Mm-hmm. So literally almost every brand there had a new product, and there's 1,000 brands.
That's wild.
It's pretty cool.
I feel like not last year, but I think it was 2 years ago we went together. I feel like we were like, there was no new product. And we were like, this is kind of boring.
Yep.
Like,
there's a ton of new products. So
yeah.
I mean, I guess we can jump ahead a little bit and talk about some of the new products that last podcast we talked about a handful of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you guys did. I wasn't on it.
Yep. All the Fox in your space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some more tires. So we have Michelin XC tires. They came out with an Aspen ST or Aspen Short Track.
Did you say Michelin?
Maxxis XC tires.
Maxxis XC Michelin GH is what you're going to talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Maxxis XC tires. They came out with an Aspen ST, which is an Aspen that's even faster, which was previously like Maxxis's faster tread pattern.
That's crazy.
And now it's even faster.
Crazy.
Looks wild.
Yeah. It's insanely fast. It's basically a gravel tire, let's be honest. It is so fast. And they also came out with a team spec casing for the new Maxxis ST, Aspen ST and the Aspen tire, which is a 170 TPI casing, which is lighter and thinner and more supple than their normal 120 TPI EXO casing.
Very interesting.
So
pretty insane.
Yeah. Both of those two are obviously extremely niche, kind of aimed towards the top racer level. Nino, you know, Keegan Swenson, all these kind of top racers from, you know, cross country world has been riding both of these tires. Jeff Kabush had on the Aspen ST in the rear at the Moab Rocks race I did just the other week and normal Aspen up front.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Yeah, really fast tires for them. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, Michelin has some new DH tires that are super burly and thick and bulletproof. The new DH22 and the DH16, which I got to see when I was in North Carolina, South Carolina. I don't know when that was, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, something like that.
Nice.
So, yeah, some new tires all around. Everyone loves new tires. And both Michelin downhill tires and Maxxis XC tires are pretty notable. So that DH22 is what Sam Hill rode to a lot of EWS wins.
Nice. So.
Very consistently at that as well.
Yeah.
That's awesome to see. You know what else I really like, aside from like, obviously the super dialed compound and tread pattern? They got the nice subtle logo, like the gray. You can get like the bright, like blue and yellow, or like the gray. It's like,
I know.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Finally, a brand figuring this out.
I mean, they probably won't sell too many of the yellow blue ones, because that option's there. I mean, but it's really nice to have a subtle logo option.
For sure.
Like, you're still riding the tire. You still are, you know, supporting a brand. It just might not be like a marketing pow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with that.
Thanks. What else we got here? DT Swiss, DEG Hub.
Yes.
That's a pretty cool little new thing.
Yeah.
Or 90 a big points. Thing, that's true. Say it. 90 points of engagement.
Yep.
New
yep.
star ratchet design.
Bigger ratchet.
I like it.
Yeah. So DT Swiss doesn't often come out with new products. And when they do, it's, you know, serving a purpose. So most recently, which was like 4 or 5 years ago at this point, they came out with the DT Swiss EXP system, which they still make. And it's still their top of the line kind of hub system. Now sitting beside it is the DEG hub system. Both found on the 240 level. Basically, the DEG gets more points of engagement, larger star ratchets, so the diameter is much larger, and the teeth are the same size as a previous 54-tooth EXP.
That's nice.
So it's just as reliable.
So it's just as reliable, even more reliable because it has more teeth and more surface area contacting itself.
Yeah. That's nice.
But they're not these teeny little teeth that are going to slip.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the most engagement for a dual ratchet system on the market.
Oh.
And it's aimed at, you know, kind of the trail and duro downhill world where weight isn't as much of an issue. It's about 30 to 50 grams heavier, I think, per size and spec. So, yeah, kind of the EXP is for like the Rode XC, kind of more weight conscious. And okay. then the DEG is for, you know, a little bit more riding performance, engagement, and some durability. So
yeah, okay,
pretty cool. Yeah. Something that I'm kind of looking forward to as a mechanic is the serviceability of it. You can take out the drive side bearing without having to undo the ratchet mechanism.
Yep.
Previously, you had to take that out with the tool, and they famously get pretty stuck on
the
there.
Ring drive.
The ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So now you can just pop the bearing in and out and service your bearings whenever you need to. If you ride in horrible conditions all the time, then you'll need to do it more often. And that's just a super nice little feature. And just because the ratchet is so much bigger now.
Sick.
So, pretty cool. Love DT Swiss stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty cool to see them make a new design on off of something that's been amazing, to be honest. So,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Big DT Swiss fan. So stoked to see them doing new stuff. And I get to go there next week to check out how they do kind of everything. I think they even make spokes and products in the Grand Junction location where I'll be. So
sick.
Yeah, that's super cool.
That's super cool. Get some little behind the scenes content there.
BTS.
See the quality there.
Yeah.
That's pretty
heard
sweet.
That they hand build all their wheels as well there. And I think that's super cool. Most companies don't need to do that.
Yeah.
But that makes the quality top notch. And
for sure.
It definitely proves that.
Good quality control. Speaking of DT Swiss, are those the wheels that you ran in Moab on your Yeti?
ASR. They are. So DT Swiss has soft launched their new XRC 1200 wheels. They do not feature the DEG hub. They feature the EXP hub because they're weight conscious.
Mm-hmm.
1300 gram wheels. And that is what I rode when I raced or participated in Moab Rocks, whatever you want to say.
Nice. So what is that race like?
That race was a 3-day mountain bike stage race. With pretty much some quite technical Moab riding that you do on an XC bike.
Nice.
So each day was about 2 hours to 2.5 hours long for me. Day one, we went up to Porcupine Rim via a fire road, which was 1 hour and 18 minutes or 15 minutes, something like that. Just straight up, basically.
Pinned as well.
Pinned as well.
Yeah. Technical climb?
No, it's fire road. This one was all fire
road. Just a fire road.
Started in town, ended up at Porcupine Rim.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go down Porcupine Rim, including the Snotch, which was covered in snow, and I did not ride it.
That sounds so scary.
Covered in snow.
Yeah, snow the night before. Just low dusting. So it was pretty slippery.
Sounds slippery to walk down.
Yeah. I even watched a GoPro of one of the pros, and they kind of like dabbed it in spots. They didn't ride the whole thing. Yeah. So
wow.
I rode it in practice, but not on the race day. And then, then you go down Porcupine Rim on an XC bike, which is pretty wild. It's like full pull, you know, you're going down, you know, some ledgy stuff, you know, 2-3 foot ledges and like just not touching the brakes, which was super fun. Day two was the Bar M riding area, which is just literally like 50 to maybe 100 foot tall climbs. All day long, consistently, no breaks.
It's punchy.
I think at one point I was like, do we ever go downhill? Because it just was like up, down, up, down, up, down. Like you never get a break.
It's like intervals.
Intervals all day and like very technical kind of rock features that you're doing trying to race over as well.
Jeez.
And then day three, you head out towards Mag 7 trails. And you head all the way out there, do some trails out there, and then head back towards the road. So, yeah, 3 days, very technical, which is kind of what I want and what I was after. So I got that. And I did pretty good. I was in the, you know, the open class and rolled in 13th out of, I think, 30 starters on day one. So,
sick. Sick. Good job, mate.
Yeah, props to doing that. To riding Moab on an XC bike with Aspens.
Gnarly.
That's pretty crazy. I've ridden Moab myself, and I would want a full travel trail bike with downhill tires probably. And to do that in that setup is you just have to have a different mindset.
For sure.
But that's a cool kind of unique thing, you know?
I actually thought there's a lot of benefits towards being on. I was on my ASR with flight attendant, which flight attendant was flawless.
I was gonna say, what was that like out there?
I just didn't have to think. It was perfect. It
always perfect.
Yeah.
Just constantly changing between locked and unlocked and trail, and
like 1,000 times probably a day.
Wow.
That's cool.
And so that worked really well. I had on these new DT Swiss wheels along with 2/4 Aspen tires, Maxxis Aspens, front and rear, with big inserts running low tire pressure. What I think really helped was the bike was so light and I could pump really easily with a short travel that in stuff that was tech and kind of flat, I could really hold speed and momentum.
And just kind of be smooth.
Yeah, where a trail bike kind of starts getting like bogged down a bit. Mm-hmm. There's pros and cons. There's definitely some big hits as well on that bike. And it came back looking a bit battered for being like a week old. But I mean, that's what bikes
are. Did you have moments where you thought you were going to maybe blow up a wheel or get a flat or pinch it or something like that?
A couple times on Porcupine Rim, I was just kind of yanking for gaps.
On that fire road? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're doing like 25, 30, pulling up for some gaps. And it's like, all right, I really hope I make this one.
Yeah, land smooth.
Because it's about, you know, a curb or a 12-foot kind of ledge that I'm trying to get over. Luckily, I was very smooth. I didn't have a single mechanical for 3 days. No flats, no drop chains, no issues, no crashes.
Nice.
It's a testament to the setup.
It is.
Yeah. So, yeah, all that went well for me.
Dialed.
Yeah.
Cool. Sick, dude.
Yep.
Trevor, you just got back from a race.
Yes, TDS. I did. I just did the complete opposite spectrum of what Liam's been doing.
For real.
So, yeah. So, it's the TDS. It's called the Dirty Sanchez Enduro. I'll try to explain it because I don't think a lot of people know about it know what it is. But
invite only.
Invite only. It's hosted by the Sanchez family. They have a ranch up in Grass Valley, which is near Sacramento, California. And yeah, it's an invite race. And it's kind of for pros and industry people, I would say. And it's a gnarly enduro stage race. So 2 days, we do around 11 to 12 stages typically. This is my 4th year doing it, so I'm lucky to kind of know the trails.
Sick.
They have just open men, open women, and then they also have open men and women e-bike class. And I was racing e-bikes this year. I've done it previous years on normal bikes, analog bikes. And it's fun. I think you kind of have to earn your turns there, but it's way more fun on an e-bike. This race isn't a typical race at all. It's a party the whole time. It's a 3-day party, including practice. And it's just a little bit more enjoyable if you can do it more relaxed and not have to worry, stress as much about results. But
yeah.
So on Friday, Thursday night, I should say, we got there and started dumping rain all night.
Whoa.
And then into the morning, still raining. And I was like, damn, it's all clay up there. So it's super greasy. And they dropped us into practice on the gnarliest stage of the weekend, first run.
Nice.
Which was pretty crazy.
Oh, muddy.
Maybe one of the hardest trails I've ever had to ride in the mud. Because you, especially on the e-bike, you kind of brake on a chute and there's not really any stopping. You're kind of just pinging off rocks and stuff. And I was very glad I knew the trails because I felt bad for some of the guys that it was their first time there having to do that trail in the mud for the first time. It would just make me like sick to my stomach.
That'd
be
brutal, man.
Yeah, pretty brutal. So a lot of people, I mean, yeah, it's an gnarly race. People were breaking themselves, breaking their bikes.
Really?
So after Friday, it stopped raining. Saturday morning, the first two stages were pretty greasy. And then the dirt just got better and better and better. And by Sunday, it was all-time hero dirt. So wow. That was cool.
Sick.
With that race as well, they do about half of it blind. So we practice like 5 trails And then the rest of it is just like, you got to just be aware.
And you had never done those blind trails previous in your 4 years?
Some of them, yes. Okay. But they change. It's kind of a web in there. Gotcha. So they kind of change it up. It's all gravity fed, yeah. But they change it up. So you're kind of always on the fly on your toes. And I think the coolest trail that we did was a downhill track that they had built for the specialized gravity team. So we got to practice that in the rain, though. So there's road gaps and big doubles and pretty scary stuff. And the rain was pretty crazy. So that's to do wild. That in the race with good dirt was fun. And we kept it light. Me and my friends, we dressed up in our Halloween costumes as the squad from Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby. And we trained it down the stage, like all three of us in a row, different orders and different on different trails, and kind of got the party started with the crowd as well. I think we were kind of like celebrities with the crowd, which was pretty cool. So walking sick. Back up and high-fiving everybody and stuff. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was cool. Bike went well. I was riding the Crestline e-bike, RS7550, and that was flawless. I did although have three flat tires on the weekend. I flatted in practice. I was running a downhill casing Maxxis DHF, and I sliced the sidewall. Didn't even feel it. Just heard it. Just pss, pss, done. And then luckily brought a spare tire in the race in a rock garden. Yeah, totally tore a sidewall again, but a huge slash. So I tried to put the old tire that I slashed on because I was out of tires at this point. 650B tire, and I put a Martin gel wrapper on the sidewall and a tube, 29er tube, because that's all I had, and that one flat in 30 seconds on my next run. So ended up getting a tire from WTB. They gave me a tire and nice. Was able to finish the race, which was super cool. And yeah, the rest of it was flawless. It didn't crash, so I was pretty happy about that. And yeah, it was a successful weekend.
Sick. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great time.
Yes, nice. Sir.
Well,
and you guys were also out in Utah
in
the past couple of weeks. We almost overlapped. Yeah, like 2 days difference.
Missed you out there, bud. But yeah, Trevor and I went to St. George for a Chasing Epic Utah trip. That was pretty epic. We rode Little Creek Mesa, Gooseberry Mesa, a couple trails called Zen and Barrel were super fun.
Grafton DH.
That was sick. That was one of my favorites.
All kind of around where Red Bull Rampage takes place. Mm-hmm. We weren't riding the same style of riding as Red Bull Rampage. Not even close.
Not quite, no.
But the trail bike stuff around there is pretty legendary and famous. And
yeah.
It was really cool to check that out.
Totally. Shout out to Bill.
Yeah, shout out to Wild Bill.
Bill is a legend.
He was one of our trail guides out there. He's kind of a legend out there. Yeah. He builds a lot of the trails. And
the trail boss.
Yeah, we ended up spending a night out there after the trip and riding some cool trails that he built with him and his buddies. And that was pretty special.
Yeah, super special. Yeah, what a great time. Mm-hmm. Just a perfectly executed Chasing Epic trip.
Yeah, that was my first Chasing Epic trip. And I was very impressed by the whole thing. I think it was just really well put on. Steve's wife cooked for us every single night, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which was amazing. Great housing. The guides were cool. We got just really good experiences on trail.
Yeah.
And especially there, the trails are marked by either paint on the rock or little stacked up rocks and sometimes not even.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm pretty good about knowing where a trail is going to be riding. I mean, I just raced a bunch of blind trails.
We were
traversing this mesa and just turning around randomly. And thank God we were following Wild Bill.
Right.
And he was just showing us where to go, which was pretty cool. It made it worth it. I would have been pretty frustrated on my own if I did that solo or with some friends. I'd be popping up trail forks every 5 seconds, just kind of pissed off because I don't know where to go.
Right. So, especially Little Creek Mesa was like, where are we?
Yeah. The Bar M trails are similar in Moab. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty good line that you can follow that's like continuous in spots, but it does get broken up. But yeah, during the race for probably 20, 30 minutes, you're just on slick rock with no dirt.
So just paint.
It's just paint. Mm-hmm. You're just following paint for like 20, 30 minutes.
It's got to be tough in a race.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to go fast and also trying to go smooth and
Yeah.
What was super cool on our trip is the guides pointed out some petroglyphs out there, which are like markings in the rock.
Super cool.
And I'll tell you what, they look a lot like the new Aspen ST trail or tread pattern. They look a lot like petroglyphs. True. Yeah.
And that one tool we found, it was like a maze grinder. Like, remember that, like the whatever it's called. I'm trying to think of the thing, like the mortar, the pestle, pedal and mortar or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Yeah, it's cool, cool area out there in St. George. It's pretty rugged. It kind of feels like the land of the free out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a cool experience. I brought the SB140 out there. Uh-huh. Perfect setup on that. Couldn't have asked for a better bike. Jared was on his Forbidden.
Yep.
Super Jared, good. He doesn't have anymore.
That's true. Which he does not have anymore.
That's true.
That was the last hurrah. But it did well for you.
Did amazing.
We had no issues. So no. That was cool.
That's good.
Even on that drop on Barrel? Mm-hmm. When I clapped the rear wheel.
Yeah, Jared did this. There's this big drop on a trail called Barrel out there. And we were kind of sizing it up because it was pretty big and blind and mandatory. And I was looking at it. I was going to kind of scope it up. Run into it a couple times and Jared just goes into it and hits it. Like, I was like, wow, that's pretty wild.
I was like, I'm just going to cut it, dude.
And I'm at the top of the trail and I hear a bah. And nothing happened, no. But he cased it really bad. He
cased it. Honestly,
how bad? Like sprocket on the knuckle?
No, almost. Okay. But like maybe like 6 inches or a foot, like short, right?
Dude, you must have hired a lawyer because you came out of that clean. And the spokes were still tight. Wheel was still intact.
No cracks.
So that was Crank Brothers Synthesis carbon wheels.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No breakage.
That's right.
No issues.
Those things have, all speaking of seeing some shit, those things have, so those are some solid wheels. Yeah. Nice. I'm impressed by those.
That was solid.
Yeah, but super solid. I guess you kind of, alluded me into the fact that I sold the bike, but yeah, I just built up my SB140 and it's pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes, I have had an SB140 for you eagle-eared listeners out there. But no,
Jared likes to do that. He gets a bike, sells it, and then goes back to it.
But happens it's just more a often with Yetis.
How good the bike is.
How did you build it up?
Let's see. Well, I've got the new Fox 36 with the Grip X damper, Eagle X01 mechanical drivetrain, Magura MT7 brakes, Race Face era carbon wheels, trail and cockpit, and new Fox transfer era cranks, Maxxis Assegai, and DHR2.
Solid.
Yeah.
Pretty bulletproof build.
Pretty solid. Perfect. Yeah. I just wanted a trail bike, fun, solid trail bike. And, it's what I got.
Nice.
Super stoked on it, but
stuff.
That's pretty good stuff. With that, should we, have a little ad?
Let's have an ad.
Let's have an ad.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Hello, Jeff again. I just wanted to quickly mention that this podcast is sponsored by you. If you have ever purchased from Worldwide Cyclery, Trail One, or Kettle, you have supported us and we genuinely appreciate it and thank you. It's not the easiest to operate a small business in this day and age, especially not in the bike industry right now. And if you've ever bought from us, I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. Thank you. That's all.
And now back to the show.
Listener questions. I really want to buy the new Ramadana. My wife says I don't need another bike because I bought two last year. Is she right? I don't think she is. That's tough. I think it depends on what bikes you just bought.
And I don't have a wife.
Yeah, might need another wife.
See, like if you just bought like a enduro bike, then I would say she might be right. I hate to say this, that she might be right, but if you don't have like that kind of bike, then I say do it. I don't know.
And like,
I also don't know what your financials are like.
2 and a year is a lot.
2 and a year is kind of a lot.
I mean, happy wife, happy life, but yeah. I mean, you got to have the bikes right.
That's true.
But also, are you buying like, you have two and you're buying another one and you're going to have three total, or are you going to sell one and buy another? Because if you're selling one and buy another, like, absolutely go for it.
Doesn't sound like he's doing that.
No. I don't know what he's doing then. Hey, if you buy the same bike that's all the same color, your wife might not notice as much.
That's true. So and hopefully also, he has raw bikes.
For $100, I might raise it. It might be a little bit more. I was doing this like years ago for $100 inflation. I'll make you a wifer seat.
Oh.
Tell your wife you paid $2,300 for this bike. She won't know.
There you go.
And then I make you the receipt. Show her $2,300.
Yep.
Yeah, I've had customers in the past tell me that they have the same color bike because it – blends in and the wife won't know how many bikes he has.
Yeah, just black. Classic. All black.
There you go. Well, I guess that's your answer.
All right.
Liam, you want to read this next one?
I'd love to. Looking for the differences between XC, trail, and downcountry bikes with similar travel. What are the differences and best uses for a different class but with identical travel, like the SB120, Yeti SB120, and the Yeti ASR?
Great question.
So
really great question.
I've had both.
You have had both.
I have one.
Let's hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
I mean, yeah, like the Yeti SB120 is a mini trail bike. It's a stiffer frame. It has a more complex suspension system. And those are like kind of the big differences, right? Like the frame is much stiffer. It can put up with more abuse. And the suspension is a bit more dynamic throughout the travel and uses the travel a little bit better. Granted, it is 120 rear, 130 front, and the Yeti ASR is 115 rear, 120 front. Couple mil difference, but it does feel like a big difference on trail. Yeah. And that's because the ASR uses a flex day system.
And single pivot.
And single pivot.
Versus Switch Infinity.
Correct.
Yeah.
They sound so similar, like with travel numbers, but it's a really completely different bike.
And Geo's almost identical between the two as well. Like, I think Reach is 10 mil shorter on ASR, but every other number is basically the same.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
But again, like.
Which is a good thing.
They ride dramatically different. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Super ASR different. Is really light, really nimble. I'd say uses the 115 well. But you use all of the travel pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely geared for lightweight climbing and making its way downhill, where the SP120 is kind of geared to be good uphill and downhill pretty evenly.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say like what Yeti SP120 is probably going to be slightly more like descending focused in the way that like you'll have a little more fun downhill.
Yeah.
And like whereas ASR, you're definitely more towards like the racing end of the spectrum.
Correct.
And like, yeah, you'll get down the hill. It's just not going to be like as fun.
Not as be, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, with one of the reasons why Yeti did that, and a bunch of brands have done these single pivot kind of flex day bikes, it's extremely light. Like the ASR versus the 120 is probably a 2 to 3 pound frame weight difference.
Wow.
And just the frame weight, not including the components that come on it.
I mean, so yeah, ASR is going to be like what, 23, 24 pounds, like most of them, like the higher end builds?
Yeah, higher end builds, like, 23 is a little light, maybe like 24-ish.
24.
Mine's 24 and a half with fly attendants.
So. With all the components, probably 4-ish pounds,
right? My 120 was, it was, I think 27 set up for Downeyville, and my ASR is 24.5, but I have flight attendant now, which is a little heavier,
adding
actually.
And a
Reverb Axis where I had a transfer SL on the other bike.
Yeah.
So I could get my ASR down to 23 if I went non-electronic suspension or dropper post.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your setup will be a little bit different as far as the components that are on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So like tire setup and components are just going to be like you're probably going to want to set them up different. Like, for example, Liam's running those double Aspens on his ASR. Like, you could do that on your 120, but it's not really the best use case.
Yeah. For sure.
You want to run some knobbier tires and a little bit thicker stuff, and you'll have a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Agreed.
Wow. What a really nice, comprehensive answer to that question.
Well, here's a question for both of you guys, because you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to go back to do a trip to the Dolomites, what bike would you ride and why? The goal of the trip is, of course, to maximize fun. Keyword fun.
Mm.
Would you bring one of your own bikes? Would you rent one e-bike? For the sake of argument, assume you would do the same trip you did last year.
Hmm.
I would go on the same exact bike I rode last year, which is my Rebel Rail 29.
Yeah.
With like a, you know, me, I think I had an EXO Plus, Maxxis EXO Plus front tire and a double down rear tire.
Pretty solid.
Pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I rode every trail. You don't do a lot of pedaling because the gondola network is so insane.
Mm-hmm.
There's like two or three gondolas out of every valley going up and over the mountains. So like,
could you get away with like double downhill tires out there?
Probably.
You probably could.
There was a lot of like flat, you know, pedaling through the valleys to like get to the next gondola or whatever. But I mean, you're not like racing. You're not like trying to worry about how fast you're going.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. With that in mind, how many rocks there is, I probably would run a slightly heavy casing tire. But yeah, I think either a trail enduro bike with like EXO Plus or double down is pretty perfect.
And nothing there's too rowdy. Like the most rowdy stuff was in Val di Fossa on the EWS trails.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not racing them. So you could get away with, you know, a 140-ish rear, 150-ish rear travel bike.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your
Forbidden Druid.
Last year you were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was a great bike there too.
High pivot.
Yeah.
Mid-high pivot 130 bike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would go, you know, heavier trail or lighter enduro bike with kind of a similar tire setup. I personally want to go for an e-bike. I just don't think it's necessary there.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, even what Joe Fox Joe was on one and that he rented and didn't even seem to need it. Yeah, like you said.
If you got a gondola shuttle, and screw that.
I prefer to not rent my own bike or not rent a bike and bring my own bike just for the sake of being used to it. I'm really picky on bar width and brake feel, which is something that rental bikes are pretty bad at.
They'll be pretty beat. They might not be the safest thing in the world either.
Yeah.
And then the money you're going to spend on renting a bike might be the same as flying with a bike over there anyway. Yeah. So,
yep.
I would say, I mean, unless it comes down to like logistics, like bringing your bike, you know, in whatever rental car, like shuttle, whatever you're doing to get to the Dolomites, it's not like whatever you're going to fly into Venice probably to get there. But that's really the only thing. That would be the only like, hurdle, right?
Or something, yeah.
Yeah. To like, how are you going to get it there? And cost wise, it's probably going to be the same, like checking your bike on the flight versus renting a bike.
Yeah.
What was it, like $200 or something like that for each bike each way?
Yeah, it depends on the airline. But
so you're probably going to spend $100-ish per day renting a bike, I'd say, maybe more. Yeah. And probably a wash there. But yeah, I mean, I would bring my own bike, like Liam said, personally. But yeah, there you go.
All right. Next question is a doozy.
Mm-hmm.
You're given a time machine to travel back to 2006 and are offered $1 million to win a race using a bike from today. Which discipline are you choosing? XC, enduro, or downhill?
What does this say? Go back to 2006?
I think, personally, I'd probably go enduro.
Yeah.
Because I think the newest bikes are so insanely better than a 2006 bike. And there's enough stages and time that I could actually make up some difference with the bike.
Mm-hmm.
I think downhill, I don't think I could beat 2006 Steve Pete or Dale Earnhardt.
I'm thinking that in my head right now. Who was racing in 2006? I'm like, probably Sam Hill and Steve Pete and Greg Minnaar.
For sure.
Going like stupid fast.
Yeah.
Me and my roommates have this discussion. Like, do you think you could win a downhill race on a modern downhill bike versus like Sam Hill back in the day?
And no.
The answer is no.
I don't think so. No.
The answer is no. And those guys are still gnarly back then.
Yeah. XC bikes, like, yeah, you're on 29er now and a little bit more efficient bike, but like those 26-inch bikes were like 21 pounds still. And maybe you have some better training and like nutrition stuff now than 2006, but like I still don't think I could beat, 2006 guy.
Was Nino racing back then? Maybe.
No. Dude, like you said, those guys were early on, but
yeah, those guys were still gnarly.
Super gnarly.
Super fit.
So I would go enduro because I think that'd be my biggest advantage.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you, Liam.
I mean, did enduro even exist in 2006? No. Yeah, it would have been like a Tomac setup. I mean, Tomac, that's before or after Tomac's time still, but where he would do XC and downhill in the same weekend and win both.
Yeah, so gnarly. Super D was probably just becoming a thing, which eventually kind of phased into enduro. But yeah, I mean, if that discipline was around back then, I would go enduro.
Yeah.
Same. I think I would choose downhill because I think it would be really fun to ride like an old iron horse or something like that.
Yeah.
Or something cool.
Well, you'd be on a new bike.
Yeah, you'd be on a modern bike.
Oh, I'd be on a, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Trying to beat those guys.
Yeah, honestly, I really want to ride a modern downhill bike because they're probably insane and you can most likely get away with murder on them. So I would do a downhill race and race some old like Crested Butte track or Big Bear or something cool. Or not Crested Butte, but like Snowmass Aspen or something like that.
So speaking of this, I watched a video a little while ago where it was like V10s in the Syndicate throughout the years. And I think it was like Steve Pete who he like did timed runs on like the OG bike from 20 years ago, like all the way up to the most recent one. And it was actually like way closer than I thought it would be. In terms of the times.
I don't think.
I guess the difference is more extreme on the enduro side.
Yeah. I don't think I could beat Steve Pete on that old V10 with me on a brand new V10.
No, you're definitely right about
that.
I don't think I could either.
I mean, those guys are the best for a reason, right?
It'd be fun to try.
It would be fun to try. Yeah. But for $1 million, I don't know. All right. How about this one? Love the podcast. My question is about blue threadlock or Loctite. So you typically put threadlock on wet and it sets in about 10 minutes and fully cures in 24 hours. So when it already comes on aftermarket stem bolts and rotor bolts, is it even doing anything since it's dried on? Should I reapply my own and assume the stuff from manufacturing isn't doing anything?
No, it's definitely doing something.
Yeah.
It's there for a reason.
Yeah. It works. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it more than that. But
well, basically, there's material if on the threads, right?
Yeah, if you have material on the threads and it does help lock it up, maybe if you put like had a bare bolt and put your own on, it might be like 10% better than if it was applied from the factory. But if you screw in a bolt with Loctite on it versus a bolt without Loctite on it, you will feel it is doing something.
Yeah.
It is harder to put on. It doesn't just like kind of flow in.
Yeah.
You have to apply some pressure. There's resistance.
Yeah. So.
It definitely works.
And when you're screwing a bolt into like a threaded bolt into the threads, the bolt is like when you're getting it torqued down, it's expanding a little bit and therefore getting tight. So if you have that extra material in there, it's just gonna lock in place.
Yep.
I mean, maybe you should thread lock it if you're like working on your bike and you have old bolts that the, you know, Loctite or thread lock is worn off a little bit, right? Like you should redo it.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to do it if it's already on there.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've had some early production full suspension bikes that like say don't come with certain thread locker that they change for production or something. And it's a massive difference of just how fast those bolts come loose. Mm-hmm. And that's all factory applied Loctite. So yeah.
There you go. Trevor, you want to read this one?
Yes, sir. Should everyone own a dirt jumper? I got into dirt jumping recently and noticed a massive improvement in cornering, pulling for jumps, and general steez.
Yeah.
Steezy.
And a nice dirt jumper is only like $400, which is pennies compared to big bikes nowadays.
Although that's 400 quid, mate.
400 quid, mate. I think you should definitely own a dirt jumper. I think it's a valuable skill for those exact reasons,
for
jumping, for comfort on the bike. Steez, definitely the steez points go up.
Yeah.
It also helps. Yeah. It helps your confidence. I mean, it's just a good skill to learn. It's kind of gnarly sometimes to learn it, and you probably crash a little bit and might get a little scraped up, but I think it's very, very important.
You learn a lot for sure.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I've had dirt jumper. I've probably will never get rid of it, 'cause there's no point. Did I ride it enough? Probably not. But, I mean, I just think it helps your air awareness, your pumping skill, and just kind of general flow on the bike. And like you said, it's not expensive, and that's why I won't really sell mine. It's, you know, not like I'm going to get a bunch of money for it.
And it's just fun. Yeah. Go with the buddies to your local dirt jumps or bike park.
Especially now that time changed, like we should get afternoon sessions going again.
I was making it a point, like I guess 2 years ago, to go once a week to the dirt jumps and just stay comfortable in the air like that, but been lacking.
Yeah. We
should do that. We're pretty close to a pretty sweet park called Sopwe, and it's a public park run by the city, and
actually pretty good sized
jumps. Now there's dirt lips, but they're all wooden lips, so all very, very much the same and relatively safe and progressive.
They are very well built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Let's do it. I don't have a dirt jumper, but I'll go and take photos of you guys.
My roommate has one. She never rides.
Oh, cool. I totally agree. I got a buddy who needs to work on his skills a little bit, and I keep on saying like we should at least go to the pump track, and like you'll get the pumping motion and build up your skills a little bit.
The pump track is the best thing to learn how to ride a bike. It just makes you aware of pumping and turning and where your bike is.
Yeah,
and
really totally good. Totally. All right, Liam, you want to read that one?
Yep. Hey guys, I noticed that Fox released a new Grip SL damper for XC Racing, and I was wondering if it would be possible and worth it to upgrade the Fit4 damper in my current 32 Stepcast to the new Grip SL. Thanks so much and love the podcast. I believe if you have the most recent 32 Stepcast,
it is backwards compatible. Yeah.
And it would be worth it. It's not only is it lighter than the Fit4, but the Fit4 uses a bladder system, where the new Grip SL uses a spring-backed IFP system. For nerdy talk, it's smoother off the top. It's going to stay higher in the travel, and it doesn't heat up as much and have some inconsistencies that a sealed damper system might have, where the Grip damper kind of eliminates that being a semi-open bath.
So what they were kind of saying also, right, it's like almost bringing like Grip technology to like an XC style damper. And another cool thing I remember is, so like if you're on a Fit4 damper and you're like either locked out or unlocked and you want to go the other way, sometimes you'll feel a little bit of resistance if you're like in the travel a little bit, whereas the Grip SL, that is not there.
Yeah, it's really easy to bump between the modes.
Yeah.
They also, I think there's also, if you're locked out on that, it has a bit of a giveaway as well. So you can kind of be locked out and then hit a bump on accident maybe. And it will actually give your fork a little bit of give. So,
that's nice.
Yeah. Where the Fit 4 is pretty firm from what I remember. I haven't ridden one in a couple of years, but
yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. My last XC bike, I had a 34 rhythm on it and wasn't too impressed with the damping on it. Just it was kind of basic yeah. to me. And I upgraded that to the Grip 2 damper and it made it the biggest difference, even though it's just a 34.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was night and day for me. So I would definitely recommend that. I would also recommend getting the serial number off your fork and making sure that it's compatible exactly. before you buy any parts. Yep. And
good call.
Give a call or email Worldwide Cycling or even the Fox guys just to make double sure. And
yep, those guys at Fox
and then send it.
Great for that too. Sweet. I'll read this next one. Do you guys think there is a right and wrong way to design high pivot bikes, especially short travel bikes? Here's why I ask. Ever since the new Norco came out last month, I couldn't help but notice the new optic looks so much like a Forbidden Druid. So I peeked at the comments and pink bike section and was surprised to see how many people felt negatively about the optic versus how many people still rave about the Druid, including myself. On paper, they're pretty similar, minus the 5mm rear travel difference between the optic and the Druid, telemeters front travel. I'm also aware the company is closely tied. My V1 Druid is hands down the most fun and versatile bike I've ever ridden, feels so confidence-inspiring on the downs, and can pedal all day. On the other hand, the optic review would steer me clear of trying something like that if it was my first foray into high pivot suspension. Interested to see what you guys think drives the most difference, or maybe lack thereof. Cheers.
Well, I mean, just to start, visually they can be similar, geo can be similar, but kinematics, which is basically a hidden feature, makes all the difference of why these two might ride differently, especially to a reviewer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the two kinematics off the top of my head, but that plays probably more difference than even like, you know, the 5mm travel or a little bit of head tube angle change or here and there.
Yeah.
That also being said, the Forbidden Druid is a really well-balanced bike.
Yeah.
It's a carbon bike. It's a light-ish bike for being a high pivot bike. The Norcos, I haven't ridden one. I don't fully know, but the weights of them kind of mind boggle me sometimes. They seem to be on the heavier side. I think this one, the shorter travel one, the Optic was the one, I want to say like 35, 36 pounds.
No way.
And the new, what's the longer travel one? The Sight?
I don't know.
There's a Sight in the range, I want to say.
One of the two newer high pivots that are as bigger travel is like 38 pounds.
Yeah.
So yeah. They're porky.
I also think what happened here is the Optic used to be kind of like a short travel downcountry ripper.
Yeah.
125 travel, pretty simple kinematic and not high pivot. And a lot of people kind of felt like they blurred the lines and like they were like, why did you ruin a good thing? Mm-hmm. Like what, you didn't need to make it high pivot. It was efficient and fast. And like now it's not. You added complexity. You added weight to this bike that didn't need it. Whereas the Druid is kind of in a different class, I feel like, even though it is only 5mm travel difference. Like you said, I don't really know the geo of the Optic off the top of my head. But I feel like that's the kind of the line is like 130 travel. Like if you're going under, you don't need it to be a high pivot and like don't really want it to be a high pivot.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think, Trevor?
It's tough. I don't know if there, maybe not the guy to ask if there's a right and wrong way to design it.
Yeah.
I would say the best thing that you could do for yourself, however, is to try and demo it.
Yeah.
Try and actually take it for a ride and go and feel how it actually is going to be. It's hard to tell, you know, it's really hard to tell how a bike's going to ride just by looking at numbers. You know, you don't really know the characteristics of like the pedaling platform it has.
True.
And, I mean, you can kind of guess, but you're never going to know until you really ride it.
Yeah.
And also take the pink bike comments for what they are. Most of those people aren't buying new bikes anyways and they will just say anything to say anything, as well as a lot of the reviewers. You know, they all have their personal preferences and one person might like a super tall stack and the other person might like a super long chainstay and that's their preference. That doesn't mean the bike is bad because they have a certain preference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ride it for yourself, make your own opinions as much as you can.
It's also tough to have a super solid opinion on a bike after riding it for two rides, you know?
Yeah.
When I first got my 140, to be honest, I didn't gel with it for about a month and now I can't get off of it. So
it
takes a while sometimes to really get used to it and really kind of flow with how the bike is going to react to your riding style. And so, yeah, take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Something about short travel and high pivot. I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting topic, heavily debated. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, how about this one? Trevor, you want to read this one?
Yes, sir. Sealant? Hello, everyone. Are all tire sealants created equal? No. Stance, Muckoff, Orange, WTB Specialized. Is the magic sauce essentially the same, and do most people just buy what's on sale?
Hmm.
How about compatibility? Should we avoid mixing? Wondering if there are differences in performance, durability, shelf life, mess considerations. Anything to steer away from? I've been using stands for about 15 years, mostly out of habit, always open to change. Would you be willing to share your personal preferences?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're all created equal. That said, it's also my least favorite product to test and try.
Yeah.
Because when you need it the most, it's going to fail on you if it's a bad product.
Yeah.
That being said, I've used Orange Seal almost consistently for maybe 5 to 6 years. And specifically in the shop, we buy the Orange Seal Endurance, meaning it lasts a bit longer in your tire. It still seals extremely well. And that's what I use 95% of the time. Other times I kind of use standard stands sealant if we're out of the Orange Seal.
Yeah, same.
But those are kind of my two. I know there's some like maybe more eco-friendly ones, or, you know, I've heard good stuff about Muckoff and the WTB. That said, I have not tried them.
Some of the sealants are latex-based. Some of them, I believe, are ammonia-based.
Yep.
And in my experience, the latex stuff works super good. The ammonia stuff, not so much.
Yeah, but stands is ammonia-based, I believe.
Okay.
And it works, you know. I'd say stands is pretty much the standard, right? Like, you know, there's worse and there might be better, but like down the middle, stands is quite consistent. The standard.
From my experience, working at a bike shop for a while and also racing for a while, what you'll hear around the pits and around the bike shop is Orange Seal is kind of the way to go.
Yeah.
It's just kind of hard, like, it just kind of is what it is around that those type of people who are using them. And I run Orange Seal personally.
Yeah.
They do make an Orange Seal race day as well that's supposed to seal even better. I haven't tried it. It just doesn't last long.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say whatever you...
Maybe I should try since I just changed my tires.
If you change your tires a lot, or if you're racing downhill and you're going through a tire in a weekend, it might be worth getting that race stuff if it does drop faster, just so you can have as the best sealing properties you can get.
Yeah.
And also don't slash your sidewalls on your tires, and because nothing's going to seal that.
Right.
Yep.
I would say whatever you run, just make sure you check and make sure that there's sealant in there, coming from a guy who just got a flat tire the other day and there was no sealant in my tire. Yeah. So no matter how hard you try and plug it up or think it's going to work, if you don't have enough sealant in there, it's not going to work. I think it was on my gravel bike. It was like whatever on the road, not a huge deal.
For the most part, the sealants are going to work if they're pretty fresh.
Yeah.
Always check to make sure you have sealant tires. It's just worth it.
Yeah.
In my backpack that I ride with, I always carry a little bottle of stands because it's convenient and it will save someone's ride.
Mm-hmm.
And back to that, probably avoid mixing.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably avoid mixing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good call.
Yep.
Yeah, well, there you go. Esteemed and awesome podcast guys, what are your opinions on saddlebags for tools and tubes? If it clears the tire when the post is down and the shock is compressed, is there any other concern? Does the weight prematurely wear on the dropper? Is there a weight limit one should aim for to maintain proper function? I have a bag that I strap to my frame, but it kind of rattles on rowdy descents. That is unacceptable and annoying. Thanks.
Yeah, I agree. That is unacceptable and annoying.
But I've actually found I get more rattle on the seat post, and I don't like the weight of it being up high on the post.
And like, you don't want to like where your stanchion. Weight.
Yeah,
it can also buzz on the tire if it's if you bottom out too hard.
Yeah, I mean, he said it clear. You know, if it clears, but yeah, I kind of run a saddlebag if there's no dropper.
Yeah,
if there is a dropper, then I strap it to the frame. That's kind of like my general rule.
Yeah.
We sell straps, OCAM straps.
Yeah, those are really sweet.
They got a boa dial on them. Mm-hmm. Also ones without a boa and just a Velcro. And you can pretty much put it on any frame and it'll act the same as a saddlebag. And that's just what I would do.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really been a fan of saddlebags on dropper posts personally either. I don't know if we could say, you know, definitely if the weight prematurely wears on the dropper or not.
I don't think so.
I don't think it would, but
I would say like if dirt gets in there between the rails or the stanchion I've seen somewhere also just doesn't really work all the time. If you're dropping it all the way down, it's going to kind of hit the seal and just not really work.
Yeah.
So I would avoid it if you can.
Yeah.
Yep.
Agreed. Well, I think we got time for one more. In a dystopian world where riders are forced to choose between A, tires of the same manufacturer but with mismatching colors, example, Max's front tan wall, rear black, or B, tires of the same color but from different manufacturers, example, Max's front, continental rear, which would you choose? Bonus question for Jared. If Bean would shred on bikes, would she be more of a DHF or DHR type? I'm going to say neither, and she would be more of an ass guy type, so...
She's an ass guy. Has
Bean seen your video where you tried to choose your mind of a DHF or DHR?
Oh, I should show her that one. Yeah. She'd probably get a kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also going to hop on a rocket and get out of that dystopian world.
It's just not an option for you.
Man. I'm getting out of there, man.
He's getting out of there.
I'm running matching brands with matching sidewalls. But if I guess I had to pick, I'd probably go A.
Really?
Well,
that's
I don't know. I actually looking at the example of it.
Yeah.
Running like an Assegai front and a Continental rear.
That could be good.
It would probably wear pretty even.
Yeah.
You know, like they feel good together.
You got two yellow logos. Like you'd really probably yellow-ish. Even have to like look a double take to even notice. Logos.
I'm going team B all the way.
Yeah, team
same,
B. Dude.
Same color. So yeah. Black on black or tan wall on tan wall.
Yeah.
Tan wall is probably got to be similar tan.
Yeah, because
sometimes they're a little different.
Yeah, like Continental and Max's tan wall are quite different.
I have no problem running two different brands of tires. It's just if the colors are wrong, then.
Did you just hear that, Liam? I think we might need to find a new person for the podcast.
Hey, it saved my race on Sunday, so I'm cool.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. Fair enough.
And the combo you ended up with was also like what I was just saying. Like the judge sweet. Rears, like mm-hmm. the earliest rear tire.
Assegai judge.
Mm-hmm. And nice. Assegai front. Like that's a good combo
and guess what?
If you're going to mix match.
I had two stages with it and didn't flat. So yeah,
that's awesome.
That's a success to me.
Honestly, yep. I've had that before where like you mix a couple brands and sometimes you just like come up on the secret sauce and you're like, this is good. Mm-hmm. Like this is a really good combo. Yep. But you can't tell anybody that.
No.
Yeah, like for example, I was running that DHR. It was max grip. But if you run it in some kind of dry rocket conditions, that trail's gone or that tire is gone in a weekend.
So for
yeah.
sure.
You gotta pick and choose your battles.
Indeed you do. And right. And speaking of picking and choosing battles, we are going to go have dinner and have a great night. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Oh, if you want to do so, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. Screenshot it. Send it to podcast@worldwidecycler.com. And we will give you...
I don't know the gift.
It's a $15 gift card to the website. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Cheerio. Good night.
Thanks,
Thank
y'all.
You. Love you.